You're about to enter into a new world of knowledge, curiosities, and high strangeness. This is a podcast of Straight Up Strange Productions.
You're listening to Mysteries and Monsters. I'm your host, Paul Bestel. Kent, Ohio may not strike you as a particularly scary location, but looks can be deceiving. Not every haunted house gives itself away, and many seem perfectly normal on face value. In Lindsay Brisbane's case, a 12-month tenancy turned into a continual struggle with the paranormal for her and her friends. The Chilling Podcast gives us an insight into a situation that nothing can prepare any of us for. But before we join Lindsay, don't forget you can support Mysteries and Monsters by signing up at patreon.com/mysteriesandmonsters. $4 a month gets you ad-free episodes, guaranteed early releases, bonus content, and more. You can also click the link in the show notes as usual. Thank you to all my patrons for your continued support, and a big welcome to Teresa, my latest. Thank you, one and all. Mysteries and Monsters is on all social media platforms. Please subscribe to the Mysteries and Monsters channel on YouTube. And don't forget, you can also visit mysteriesandmonsters.com for episodes and merchandise. Thank you as always to Dean Bestall for his marvellous artwork. The show is produced by Brennan Storr of the Ghost Story Guys. And Mysteries and Monsters is delighted to be a part of the Straight Up Strange network. So, let's venture across to Ohio and find out what on earth could cause the chilling. Regular listeners will know one subject that I love to discuss is that of haunted houses and hearing about cases that may be not that well known. My guest today has documented a haunting that affected her and her roommates in a little house in the city of Kent, Ohio, that unfortunately came with an additional tenant. Lindsay Brisbane, creator and narrator of The Chilling. Welcome to Mysteries and Monsters.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
I am delighted to have your company, Lindsay, because as we were joking before we started the interview proper, I had actually been listening to your show before you reached out to speak with me. And so I was delighted to get an opportunity to dig into this because, as anybody who may not be aware, and we'll dive into this, The Chilling is essentially a serialization of your personal experiences in a house that had more secrets than you could shake a stick at, really.
Absolutely, yes.
So I find it, I'm always interested because as someone that spent a portion of their early life in a haunted house, though certainly not to the extent of some of the ones that I've spoken with, Lindsay, as growing up, you were, I know you've joked before that you ended up having to stay at halls whilst you were studying because your family abandoned you and moved down to Florida. So you've kind of had a situation in your life where you've been connected to the supernatural throughout.
Yeah, you know, it's a weird thing because growing up, it was always considered normal in my household to have paranormal experiences. And I came from a Christian family, but we, as I always say, the best way to sum it up, we were weird Christian, meaning that, you know, in my household, we openly discussed the fact that Jesus was an alien, which right. if you said that at church or something, people would like be like, what are you talking about? So we were always into mysterious things and mysterious television shows and discussing things. But again, paranormal happenings in my family weren't considered odd at all. So I was really lucky in the sense because it seems like abilities have been passed down, you know, generationally, that I wasn't just some kid who had these experiences with a family that thought I was crazy. Instead, it was, oh, what happened to you? Let's talk about it. You know, was it good? Was it bad? And they did their best to give me what tools they knew, how to protect myself where I could. So yeah, it's a strange thing to think about. And it wasn't until I got older probably like junior high and high school that I started to realize, oh, like not everybody has experiences like this, and not everybody's family openly talks about these things. And I kind of learned to kind of keep my mouth shut unless I realized somebody was into these things, and then it was okay to talk about it.
Yeah, nobody wants fingered as the weird kid at school.
Oh, and I certainly was, by the way. Absolutely. Anybody who's ever watched, listened to my podcast or knows me or went to school with me, they're like, oh yeah, she was the weird one. I tried not to be, but I just stuck out like a sore thumb, it's for sure.
Well, I think it's one of those things these days that I think, depending on when you grew up, and I've heard people say this before and when I've interviewed other people, Lindsay, over the years, that it seems that these days, I think, we sometimes look at things and think, oh, well, everybody's a bit weird now. The kids will be a lot better about it. But I think it's still very similar that there are certain subjects that you don't speak about in normal conversation, as you refer to there, because I know some people like to talk about ghosts and things like that when they're younger, but not many people talk about their own personal experiences. It's more like favorite ghost stories, or they've heard about certain places.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting because once someone finds out my story, whether we're with someone and they tell me, you know, or they tell them, I should say, or they've heard the podcast or seen me on TV, once they kind of get me alone in a corner, maybe they've had a beer or a glass of wine or two, and suddenly they kind of pull me aside and go, I have a story to tell you, you know, but it's almost like, I feel like a priest, a confession or something. Like, you know, they know they can talk to me and I'm not going to judge them, but they also won't bring it up in a group. I swear, I feel like a paranormal priest where someone just pulls me aside and says, I need to tell you my story. I need to unburden myself. You know, this is what happened. So, but to your point, growing up, it was never something, it was never something that people, I feel like, openly talked about, especially their personal experiences. They might like to talk about a particular story or a scary movie, but they weren't sharing their experiences. And I feel like now people are getting better about that, at least in the form of, you know, podcasting or books or things, you know, or ways that we can communicate online where it doesn't have to be face to face. I think people just worry they're going to be judged, you know?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, Kent in Ohio as well is one of those places. Obviously, it's a very well-regarded town in regards to the university there and college. It's got a notable number of luminaries and local celebrities that have passed through it. So it's a very well-known place in regards to education. Would you have any kind of inkling, even though, as you say, your upbringing was very open to the supernatural, even before we ended up in this very odd house and the very odd story of how you ended up moving in there with your roommates, did you kind of have any sort of inkling of how haunted Kent seems to be?
Unfortunately or fortunately, I always say, I never know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. I had a lot of paranormal experiences on campus before even moving into this house. One, it was in particular, I was staying in a dorm. My parents, when they had moved to Florida, I was kind of left homeless in the summers because usually students go home. So for my first year, my parents were like, well, just stay in the dorms and you can live there, but no one does. So I was in an entire dorm, 18 going on 19, living by myself in this building. I think two or three floors up, there was some foreign exchange students from, I think, China. But that was it. So it was me. I had an entire floor to myself. And I started dealing with this really intense haunting. And, you know, so much happened in this situation. And I just thought, I can't believe this is happening, you know? And it wasn't necessarily super scary, but incredibly spooky. And I knew that whatever was there was trying to communicate with me. I started to get the sense of, this isn't necessarily negative. It's startling me. It's scaring me. Because I, you know, it's a spirit, but it's trying to communicate with me. And I kind of in my mind would talk to it and just say, like, I'm trying to figure out what you want or who you are. Like, tell me. And eventually I saw this plaque, and there had been somebody who had tried to save a child from drowning and died. And the building was named and dedicated after this person. Mm. And when I read the plaque, I instantly knew that's who it is. And I went back and spoke to the spirit and said, "This is you, isn't it?" And I never knew that the building was haunted. And recently I was talking to another podcast, and I guess that dorm is known for being haunted by her ghost. And, you know, I didn't learn that till many years later. And I was like, wow. So I had a lot of those experiences in the city. I had another one in another dorm. And so it is a kind of strange vibe, because also they had the May 4th massacre, which was a very unfortunate, sad part of history, but a shooting where people died, four, I believe. And to walk to my classes, I actually had to pass and walk over where they died every day.
Mm-hmm.
And again, as somebody who will say is a little tapped in, I could feel it sometimes, you know, and sometimes I would stand to, they had kind of stationed off where they died, where they were shot and passed away. And they have like markers for who their names were. And sometimes I would just kind of hang out next to where they passed away. And just sometimes you could feel the energy. I don't know if they were per se there, but, you know, I would just kind of mourn and like be like, this is so sad, you know. So the campus itself has such a violent history. You know, there was a lot of history there with First Nations people. I believe that the Underground Railroad ran through there as well. And a lot of different hauntings, including there's a Masonic temple that's known for being very haunted. So the city itself has a very spooky vibe, for sure.
It's almost as if it was meant to be your place of further education then. Lindsay would say.
I think so, yes.
I mean, I've heard you talk about this spirit that was hanging around in that particular dorm. Was it sort of, it looked as though it was sort of searching through your belongings, like it was just having a good rummage every now and again?
Yeah, so with that story, I can go into a little more detail. So when I first moved in, I got in there, and at first I just had this really weird feeling. And initially it was because to take a shower, I actually had to shower in another building. And it was like in this weird parking lot on campus that I had never seen before. And it was so creepy because there were no real locks on the door. And literally the campus said, "You're the only person at this point on property, so we're not going to turn the showers on in your building until these exchange students arrive, and then we will." So I would have to like hike my shower stuff in my car, go to a building where I feel like, you know, Ted Bundy would like steal someone, and like shower, and the lights didn't work either. Yes. So I had to like leave the front door open, and I'm in these weird showers, and I'd have to run back. But when I would come back to where I was actually like staying, I just had this strange feeling at first, like I know I'm alone, but I feel like there's people are like on the floor or in here. Like I just didn't feel alone. And sometimes I would walk around the building in the long hallways and kind of walk around and just, I don't know. And it was so empty, but I was like, it doesn't feel empty. And it just kind of sat like that. But the initial first thing that really happened was the elevator would stop, and where my door was, it was right across from this elevator, and you could usually use the stairs in the building, but I think they put me there because they were like, well, if she needs like to get in or out or move stuff, she's the only person, so we'll just line her right up with the elevator. And what was weird was the elevator would only come to my floor, because especially before the exchange students got there, if you press the button. And if you didn't press the button, it just wouldn't pop there. There's no reason for it to. Yeah. And so sometimes I would just hear it go ding, and I could look through the little, you know, peephole in my door, and it would just be open. And sometimes it would stay open for like, I don't even know, half an hour, like a crazy amount of time. Mm. And I would just be like, what is going on? And it would do this all the time. And then even after the other students came, and it was very random. It wasn't like, if it happened like consistently, I'd be like, oh, it must just be a glitch because I'm on this floor and some reason the elevator just comes back up. But it would be so random. So I was just like, this doesn't make any sense. And it just started to give me kind of the willies. I mean, just you'd hear it. I'd look out the peephole and it would just stay open. And I would just be like, what is going on? So then one night, you know, classic time, it had to be around 3 a.m. if I remember correctly, I hear someone going through my stuff. And the way the room was, it was a very long room with the windows at one end with my bed and my fridge. And then I had like closets on the wall and a desk in the corner and the door. And I could hear someone like going through my belongings, through my closet. I mean, I could hear the doors opening and closing. I could hear the hangers. I could hear, you know, them going through papers or my book, like my book bag, like everything.
Wow.
In the middle of the night. And, you know, the first few times it happened, I remembered being like, okay, this is it. Somebody has broken into the dorm. They know I'm alone and they're here to kill me. Like, I was obviously terrified.
Yeah.
And, you know, then eventually I like worked up the courage to really look and see what it was. You know, I am funny enough at times, a bit of a scaredy cat. So the first few times I heard it, I kind of just froze. When I get really scared, I don't move. So I just laid there very still, which would make me a very easy victim for someone like Michael Myers, because I would never run. I would just, if he came at me, I would just be like, and he'd be, he might walk past me and be like, this makes no sense. he'd be like, is she a statue? I don't know. So usually when I get scared, I don't move. It's like a joke with a friend, amongst my friends. But I remember the first few times hearing it, laying in bed, kind of putting a pillow over my head and just being like, please stop. Like, I can't move. Like, I literally can't move. But eventually I was just like, after a few nights at this, I just thought, that's it. I've got to see what's going on. Obviously, someone here isn't here, you know, isn't here to kill me. And I'm getting a sensation that there's an entity in my room or spirit. So I would look. And what was so crazy is I could see the shadow of a person bent over. I could see them sometimes standing next to my closet, like with an arm going in my closet. I could see them clearly in the darkness. I could see their figure and form.
Yeah.
And so eventually I had my good friend Lane sleep over and I didn't say anything, but Lane's tapped in a bit herself and I just was like, well, we'll see what happens. And she wakes me up in the middle of the night and goes, Lindsay, do you hear that? There is somebody in your room. And I'm like, I know. And she goes, what do you mean you know? And I went, it's a ghost. It goes through my stuff. So she peeked around and she goes, I can see them. Like, they're squatting there. I mean, I can remember us in the darkness just laying there whispering. And I go, yeah, they'll stay for a bit. And then like they just stop eventually. And so we just laid there like listening and whispering to each other and her just being like, what the heck, you know, kind of thing. And then we talked about it. I remember a lot more the next day. And so that was validating, but I was just like, what? And then, you know, another thing that started happening was when they eventually turned the showers on in this building, it's really weird because the way the showers were, they were very old. And, you know, if you've ever been to a really old, well-built hotel, the shower handles are kind of really hard to turn. They're not like easy turns, like a big metal, like knob, and
yes,
cold to hot is a full rotation. So the first time this happened, I was, you know, shampooing and all of a sudden the water went, and I like to take a hot shower. Like, I like to take the kind of shower that, you know, it may liquefy your skin. I like it real yes, hot. You know, I like a steamy hot shower. Yeah. And so suddenly, I mean, I get hit with the coldest ice water ever. I remember the first time this happened, I got soap in my eyes, which is I hate more than anything. And I'm turning around trying to rinse the soap out of my eyes with like cold water and trying to like keep my body away from the cold and splashing water in my eyes. And I'm just like, what the heck? And I look and the handle was turned to cold, which would be all the way back on the other side. And I'm thinking, did I bump it? Did I touch it? No, I would have felt that. This doesn't make any sense. So it kept happening, you know, it just kept happening. So one day I was washing my hair and I just started to have the feeling whatever's in my room that's going through my stuff is also maybe what's doing this. So I was like pretending, if you will, I was like washing my hair, but I was kind of waiting. And I started to feel the water change. And I turned around really quick and I actually got to watch the handle turn all the way to cold.
Ooh.
And I just stood back and thought, oh my gosh. Now, weirdly, you would think like, you know, that's freaky, which it was. It gives me the goosebumps. I just got them right now. But something in my mind said, whoever this is, whatever happened to them has to do with water, cold water. And it just, in my mind, I just heard water, water, water. And I just thought, water, what happened to you with water? And then I think, if I remember at that point, I said, okay, I get it. Like, I think I talked out loud and was basically like, okay, look, I get that you're doing this. I understand there's like, water's a thing, but could you please stop doing it? Like, it's getting to a point where it's like really bothering me. I acknowledge that you're here. Please, no more cold water. I know it's you. And to be honest, it didn't happen after that. So another weird thing that happened, I was leaving my room and I reached for the door handle and an arm came over my shoulder and reached for the handle like on top of my hand. And when I looked at the arm, kind of like mid to forearm, it kind of just like evaporated away. Like the edge of it evaporated, and it kind of looked like, there's this movie called 30 Days of Night.
Yes.
And when the vampires get in the sun, or like at the end of the movie, the way that kind of ash seems to pull away, it's kind of how the edge of the arm looked to me. Like, it was like the arm was clear and then it was like this weird kind of fuzzy, ashy, I don't know, stuff. And I could tell looking at the hand, it was a woman's hand. So I was just like, okay, all right, like, you're a woman. Something happened with water, and I hear you. And the rustling through my stuff, I started to get this weird impression that they were trying to figure out who I was. I don't know how to explain that, but like, they were trying to like learn about me or get a sense of who I was as a person, because I could hear them going through like my personal stuff, like my purse and stuff. Like, they were trying to almost like, if you were trying to figure out with limited abilities, as I do know some spirits have, how do I communicate to her? Like, how can I get through to her? Like, I just felt like she or it was trying to figure it out. And so one night I just kind of said, okay, I know you're in here. I need to sleep. You can be in here, you know, basically, or whatever. I forget how exactly how I said it, but it was basically like, you can be in here, but I need to sleep and I just need you to stop. And I remember seeing it just kind of step away and kind of sit down on the floor. And I was like, you don't have to leave, but I can hear you and I need my sleep. And so the rustling at night stopped as well. But it wasn't until I walked through and saw the plaque about the woman who drowned saving a child or trying to, when it clicked and I read that, it was as if, I don't know, like in the movie The Matrix, where he gets all that how to do kung fu like downloaded into his brain. It's just like, yes, all this information just kind of went through my brain, and I knew, this is her, the water, a teacher. And it made sense. Like, even the way she was going through my stuff, it felt like she would be a leader or a teacher or something of that nature, of some sort, you know. And so when I came back to my room and I finally, and I don't remember her name, I should have looked it up before I started the story, but the hall's named after her. I believe it's Coons Hall. But when I said all this and I said her name and I said, this is you. And I just told her, you know, I just want you to know you're not forgotten. I know you're here. What you did was like really brave and amazing. And I'm so sorry you passed on. But you're not forgotten. And then that was basically it. Like, I didn't have any more experiences with her, but it was a very touching moment for sure.
It's very interesting that you've kind of gone through all this where they're trying to get your attention, and it's almost as if as soon as you've given it that kind of respect, even, Lindsay, or acknowledgement that you're aware of the situation and the history, then it's almost as if it was settled then. It felt, well, I don't need to bother this person anymore. They're on my wavelength.
Yeah, and that's kind of the sense, because I've had other situations, not quite as, I mean, because that could be a little mini TV movie in itself, but, yes. You know, I've had much smaller incidents, but very similar, where a spirit kind of, because sometimes I can see them too. It's weird, I have to do it with my eyes closed, but sometimes I get the sense that they can tell that I can see them, and they just want to give me, you know, information, or just almost like a, you can see me, you know. And once I kind of establish with them, yes, I can, they usually kind of back off. And I've just learned that sometimes I can hear them, sometimes I can smell them, sometimes I can see them, and they all seem, for the most part, to just want some acknowledgement, especially if you can tell that they're there, which is why I tell people if they're dealing with a haunting, I understand that it can be really scary. Trust me, a door opens on its own that can't open. That's going to freak anyone out, you know? but it doesn't always mean malicious intent, because we as humans, we open doors all the time. Why in the next world, if I wanted to walk in the room, for example, so for your listeners, like if you're like, well, that's scary. Of course it's scary, but think of it like in this context. My husband's in another room. I want to get his attention and I don't want to use my phone or something. I just open the door and walk in the room and go, hey, you know, I need to talk to you. If you can imagine, you might not be able to see them or hear them or sense them, but why wouldn't they open the door to come in to try to get your attention? So I'm not saying there aren't plenty of scary, you know, or malicious things that do happen, but for the most part, it's what I've learned is just pay attention and try not to get scared. Like, just take a deep breath. And if you really think something paranormal is going on, try to figure out who and what it is. And if you're really worried that you don't know what you're doing, find a reliable person who knows what they're doing and ask for their help. Because most of the time, I guarantee you, it's really not that scary once you understand who they are or what they want. And it's, you know, just like any of us would feel. If you feel like no one can see and hear you, that's not a good thing. And we all want acknowledgement in life, you know, or a friend. They might be just lonely, you know?
Well, absolutely. I've often considered this for quite a long time, that I'm not sort of drawn into one particular explanation when it comes to hauntings or the paranormal, Lindsay. I don't think, when you deal with this, and there is such a variety of experiences across the world from people in different situations, that I don't think it could ever be a one size fits all situation. And I think, as you say there, there is something unusual about normal everyday objects acting in a way that we don't expect, like you say, a door opening or even a lift, which is one of the most basic modes of transport that most people in the world have either been on or deal with on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. There is something about a lift when it opens on an empty floor with nobody in it or nobody calling it that takes it to a whole new level. In the office that I work in, there is a particular floor with let's just say a few people have had some unusual experiences on there in a variety of ways, some rather amusing. So it's clearly got a sense of humour, whatever it is. But even for somebody as like myself, who's well versed in this and has spoken with people and visited numerous haunted locations and written about them, even I get the chills up my spine when I'm in the lift and it opens on this particular floor and the lights are off and I know nobody's pressed the button to call the lift and it just opens up. And I, even no matter where I am in that lift, I will find myself moving to the back of it away from the door for no reason. Even somebody like myself, who I would like to convince myself that I am probably fairly balanced in those types of situations, but I think it's when it happens, it's how it catches you unaware, I think.
Yeah, and it's startling. You know, it's no different than whether somebody does it to you on purpose. Like, you might have your headphones on or not know they're there, and somebody comes up and they're just like, hello. And you're just like, oh, I didn't see you there. Like, you scared me. I equate it to the same thing where, you know, if they're trying to come to where you're at or trying to get your attention and you're not paying attention, it's kind of like a little kid. If you're not listening and they keep balling up a piece of a napkin and like flicking it at you, and the parents like, stop doing that. And the kid's like, are we almost done? Are you almost done with what you're doing? Can we leave yet? And the mom's like, no, I'm still going. And the kid balls up another piece. Like, I often think of it like, imagine that happening, except we can't see them. And to us, it's so startling. And it is. It's so startling. I've had so many things happen. As I told you, though, I freeze when I'm terrified. So I get stuck standing there just going, is more going to happen? Do I talk to it? You know, what do I do? Because I can't move for at least 5 minutes. I'm stuck here. But it is startling. And that's what I always tell people. It's okay to get scared. But it's also okay over time, if things keep happening, to really try to figure out or discern, is it malicious, or is it similar to the behavior of a human being? And if you start to get the sense like this doesn't seem any different than something a human would do if they were here, that's the time to start setting boundaries. If they scare you, tell them, look, I know you're in here because I can feel you, or you just did that. But here's the thing. You're freaking me out. You're freaking yes. out my kids.
Yeah.
I understand you want me to acknowledge you. The problem is I don't have abilities. You know, if you don't, just say, look, I can't see or hear you. And I am so sorry about that. I just don't have that ability. But I respect that you're here. We can share the space, but stop slamming the door every night at 2 because you're scaring everyone. And I know you must be frustrated, but the best I can do for you is just let you know that I know you're here. And if you respect us, you're welcome to stay. And if you're uncomfortable and you want to move on, then please do. Like, you know, it seems ridiculous, but I'm telling you, it really does work. And the more scared you get, I'm sure that they can tell that you're getting scared and you might be scaring them, you know, like the movie The Others or something.
Yes.
Like, you know, how much of a haunting is us scaring them just as much? So, you know, because if I walked into a room and people just went, oh, and screamed, I would scream and run out too and slam a door behind me. So yes. maybe they walk in, they don't realize you're in there. They open a door, you scream, and they run out and slam the door. But now the family is like, there's an evil entity that opens and slams a door. Well, no, maybe they got scared by you too. Like, we don't know how this works, but what I can say from my personal experience is establishing boundaries, is a very healthy thing. And if you're religious and you're scared, well, arm yourself with your religion as well. You know, wear your cross, wear things that make you feel comfortable, say prayers, if you will, pray for the dead, pray for their spirits, ask them to move on. But at the end of the day, 99% of the time, it's not actually something evil. It's not out to get you.
Well, as we were discussing, Lindsay, I suppose it's one of those situations that when we consider ourselves well-read or believe that we have more of an understanding than the normal world when it comes to strange things, I suppose when you look back at what you went through, is it one of those situations that, as you say, it's all right to be afraid? I think the one thing about this particular subject, and well, as with anything that falls under the supernatural or Fortean umbrella, Lindsay, I think the day you think you know it all is the day something comes along and bites you on the backside. Now, I'm not suggesting that you were full of yourself or believe that you were able to understand what was going on in this little house that you end up moving into. Yeah. But it's remarkable that when I listen to the show, which is a phenomenal serialization of the events that affected yourself and your roommates and some other people that were around you guys in your social circle, it made me think a lot about how sometimes we can deal with things, because it reminded me, I even though I'd grown up in a haunted house, you know, as very similar to you, our family were very open about the supernatural and the paranormal, were well read, watched a lot of things about it. I remember we lived in a certain house where we all had a weird situation about, we were all pushed down the stairs more than to make it that it was a bad carpet, and it was always very sudden, and it always happened in the, so it was always something first thing in the morning, sort of 9-10 o'clock in the morning. And all of us, even the person who was even more skeptical than I like to consider myself, even though I am a very open-minded person, Lindsay, even they had it happen. And once it happened to us more than once, people began to think, this is a bit weird. And it unsettled us all. Even somebody such as myself, who considers themselves well-versed in this, that even I felt perturbed by it.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is that for me, leading up to living in this house, I always felt that I had a good handle on the paranormal. You know, Paul, I always felt like I had a lot of spooky and terrifying things happen, but I did feel like I had a good handle on it.
Yeah.
And then I lived in this house, and I think the universe was teaching me a bit of a lesson, in the sense that, because my mother had always told me, that God would protect you, but also that like really evil things do exist. And both in the terms of a human being, whether it be a horrible serial killer or whether it be an entity or a demon. And I believed my mother. Who doesn't? You know, it's your mom. Yeah. But there's a part of you that still is just like, well, how real can a demon be? You know, like I know a serial killer exists, but I mean, come on. Like, I mean, I know a demon probably exists, but like, and I've had plenty of experiences even as a child that should have told me these things can really get a hold of you. But that house, I mean, to this day, there's times I was doing dishes today and I literally thought, Paul, how could that have all actually happened? Like, I know it did. It's with me. It will be for the rest of my life. But there are moments when I just almost like PTSD style, things just flash back in your mind and you go, I cannot believe how awful this really was and how scary. I was actually thinking about in the podcast, I talk about the running on the stairs. And I don't know why every time I watch something spooky involving stairs, especially like there's a scene in The Exorcist in the extended cut where she runs down the stairs in this horrible body position. But the sound of that running in that film and what everybody talked about and what it sounded like me running, like it just, you go, that was real. Like that sound, when I hear it, I go, yep, that happened. Like, you know, and you just go, why? Like, I get why, because they say evil things like to just do bad things and mess with people, but you're still just like, but why us? Why me? You know?
But it is puzzling, isn't it, as well? Because it's one of those aspects, and this is something that obviously, as you've developed your knowledge and your thirst for answers over the years, Lindsay, you've kind of gone down a lot of blind avenues and dealt with a lot of urban myths, which is one of those chuckling things that when I've listen to what people were telling you and the fact that you were speaking to people who you would expect to have the answers, and often they were just telling you what the local legend was, which I found very, very amusing. And it is one of those things that I've heard somebody describe the house as completely unremarkable in regards to the fact that it doesn't look spooky. And I'm always surprised when I hear people who talk about having experiences in a house they believe to be haunted by something, where people will sometimes say, well, it's not old, it's a new house, my grandfather built it for us, there's nothing wrong with the land, it was just fields, as though these are the rules. A haunted house has to be 200 years old and looks like it's off the set of the Addams Family or some other sort of 80s teen horror film where the strange old man lives in the house that looks like it's falling down and everybody thinks they're a bit strange. And yet I would suspect in the whole scheme of things, when you look at people's experiences, the vast majority of people live in normal houses on normal streets that you wouldn't have the first idea was haunted if you just walked past it.
And, you know, a great point to make of that, you know, I'm always into making analogies, if you will. And when we think about, for example, because I had just brought up Ted Bundy before, but when we think about some of the most prolific serial killers, on the surface, a majority of them, they look normal. Mm-hmm. You know, they look, some of them are attractive. Some of them are really charismatic. Yeah. Some of them are well put together. Some of them have good jobs. Not all of them. Of course, there's some that, you know, it seems pretty obvious. But for the most part, their exterior is deceptive. But what's below is sullied and soiled and dark and horrific. And they've learned how to hide it. And I have come to understand that a haunted house is the same way. The exterior can look normal. It can look inviting. Nothing has to stand out about the building or the land itself, just like with somebody who's a serial killer, for it to not be haunted. You know, if I'm going to be, and this is just, I'm putting myself in the shoes of a dark entity. No one should ever want to do that. But let's just say, you know, for the sake, you know, sake of argument, that I, you know, was a dark entity. If I really wanted to scare people, why on earth would I, as you said, pick a house that looks like the house from the Addams Family? everybody's already freaked out by that place. If you really want to lure people in and you really want to freak them out, pick a place that looks inviting, just like a serial killer's exterior. Pick for them. They put that out for a reason. So if I was a dark entity, I would probably go, this works, because people will not look at this place and go, you know, do not come here. In fact, it looks quite the opposite. And to this point, there's another house in the city of Kent that everyone thinks is the house. I get messages on my social. People have posted it on Pinterest and other places going, this is the house where the doctor killed his wife. And it's the one from the show and the pug. And I don't know how else to tell people it's not the house. And that house actually looks creepier. Yeah. Even though it's still not super creepy, it still looks creepier than the house we were in. And yet people are just like, that must be it. Like, look at it. And, you know, it does look a little creepier. But I'm like, guys, when we say it was normal, like, you would never pick this house out ever. You could drive up and down every street in Kent. I'm telling you, you're never going to figure out which one it is, because it's never going to stand out to you.
Well, that's the other thing as well, that I've always been quite taken with yourself and your roommate's experience, is that you haven't said where this is, because I know, and I'm sure you do as well, Lindsay, the amount of people who just think, oh, well, I've heard about this house, I'm just going to start taking bits of the fence, or stealing ornaments off their porch, or even, I know some places people have even dug up the garden, so they've got a bit of this haunted house's garden. I would suspect that it's probably, and I'm not even going to, with the greatest respect, and I don't mean this in regards to yourself or your experience, I'm not interested in the address at all, because because I think for you, that gives this even more credence. I mean, it is one of the most frightening stories I've heard in regards to someone's personal experience and what they've gone through. And as you said earlier, when you look back at it, you sometimes think, I can't believe I've got through that. Or did that really happen? I can't believe what I witnessed and what the other people with you did. That it's remarkable how tough we are sometimes, that when we're dealt with really challenging, difficult circumstances, how quickly we can adjust to adapt and deal with things, even though we're on tenterhooks all the time. We're hanging in there. We don't know what's going on. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know when it's going to happen, or what even. And yet you seem to become attuned to it. You find yourself becoming more malleable and flexible. You can adapt far quicker than you thought you could in circumstances that, to the outside world, couldn't possibly be happening. Things like this don't occur.
Yeah. And, you know, those are two really, really interesting points. And on the first one, with why I never disclose where the house is, totally to your point, because people, and in my youth, I was that kind of person. I would have gone yes. and taken a photo of myself in front of the house, you know, like that was me for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I've even had my picture taken in front of the original Amityville Horror House. I can't help myself. I am one of those people. So part of the reason yes. I never will tell is because I'm just like the rest of you guys. Don't worry. but the other thing is, I know that what's in there is still there. Mm. And I do not want to give it more energy. It doesn't deserve it. And it yeah. wants it. And I just do not want the evil that dwells in that house to be given, because all the people coming, bringing that energy of excitement, and it loves it. Trust me, it feeds off it. And on the off chance that somebody, whoever is living there now, I know there are people are, is not currently dealing with anything, the last thing that whoever is there needs is for a bunch of people to bring that bad, weird energy. And the next thing you know, they're starting to deal with stuff in that house because maybe it triggers it again, you know, or, you know, whatever it may be. So it's not worth it. And that's why I don't share that. And as for the, you know, the adapting to living in an environment like that, I often think about it kind of like when you hear stories of people that have been held hostage, you know, or prisoners of war, and they tell their stories about the things that they went through and they survived. But when you hear their story, you just go, how did you manage, or how did you get through that and come out the other end?
Mm.
And you hear stories like that, whether it's a kidnapping victim who's held for a while, like all kinds of these weird stories. But when you listen to them talk, you go, I can't imagine being in that situation and finding joy in, you know, taking little lines on the wall to know what day it is or if it's day or night. Or, and you listen to it, you're just like, this is insane. And then they come out the other side and they have gratitude and they're so grateful and they don't even seem to have anger or resentment, you know? So I look at it like my experience in that house, never taking away from anybody who's been a prisoner of war or been through a traumatic thing. But what I can say is, if you want to look at it spiritually, for a year, I was a spiritual prisoner of something very dark. And it was, you get through it day by day. You get through it by becoming more adaptable and malleable. And you're doing your best to just keep your sanity intact. That's really what it is, because you're questioning everything. Did the cabinet in the kitchen just really open because something opened it? Or did somebody not close it and it's just a drafty house? Like everything that happens, you're on edge questioning, is it your sanity? Is it something happening? Like you get to that level. So you're just trying to keep it together until the end. Like, and I knew there was an end. I knew we had a year to get through. I don't think if I had to live there forever, that I can't say for sure that my sanity would have stayed intact. I can't say that I would have survived. But knowing that I had to just get through a year, you know, kind of like that person taking those little lines on the wall, I was just counting down the days, the weeks, the months until I was out of there.
Yes, there are some benefits to short-term leasing agreements, Lindsay.
Yeah, that's definitely one.
You know, yeah, sometimes it's a pain in the bum trying to think about, oh, well, we need to move. We've got to get this planned. And you start thinking about 3 months before that date's coming up, right, where we're going. You start looking around and you start wondering. But in a situation like this, you'd be like, thank the Lord. Because I have to say, when I listened to the episode, because obviously I was aware of the story, ironic, as we were saying before we started, because I'd seen you appear on an episode of Paranormal Witness several years ago, which over here in the UK was season 4, I think. So I'm not sure where it would have been in North America, but it's easily tracked down because it's the only episode based in Kent in Ohio. So I think anybody that goes on the Wikipedia page will be able to track down the particular episode wherever they live. I think for me, I have to be brutally honest, because the show was recommended to me halfway through and I suddenly thought, and I've heard about this before. I was not expecting the series to begin with the episode. I have to say, I found the first episode probably the most troubling because of the content. Lindsay, it really moved me, and it made me feel deeply uncomfortable because of the subject matter. And fair play to you and your friends for fronting that situation up. And it rocked me, I have to be honest. It's as someone, once again, as someone who thinks they're, you know, I've watched a lot of documentaries and we've been talking about serial killers. I've watched a lot of things about a lot of deeply uncomfortable people. I think when you hear of situations of abuse and stalking to that, and it's one of those things that it happens far more than it should. It's amazing how many people go through it and just, as we're saying, deal with those kinds of things and have to take steps to try and live a normal life when they don't know what's around the next corner. I was stunned to see and hear what had happened and to go through to get you to the point that you ended up in this house. That it's one of the most challenging things I've probably heard for quite a while.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting too. When I was writing out the scripts for the show, I had a lot of people close to me say, are you really going to tell that part of the story? And I said, I am. It's a huge part of the story, because whether or not, and I hope my listeners understand it, but what happened to me that year before, what was in the house mimicked and mirrored it. I was stalked by a human and I was then stalked by a demon. And then the abuse that I suffered that year prior, my best friend ends up going through the exact same thing. And I just knew that whatever was in the house was really crafting a lot of the trauma that I was reliving based on what I had just gone through. Mm. And so it's a huge, huge part of the story, because you think you've escaped one abusive stalking situation, and now you end up in a worse one because you can't see what's doing it to you. And it was a very challenging thing to talk about, because my friends and people who knew me said, he's still out there. Like, he could hear this, and that could be what triggers him to come get you. And I said, I understand that. But if there's one thing I learned about the house and that relationship, is if you don't stand up for what's right and you don't stand up to bullies, they continue their behavior. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if that's ever the case, at the end of the day, if my first episode ever helps one person to check a few red flags and say, I think this person I'm with maybe is exhibiting some of these behaviors, and it saves their life or saves them from that sort of relationship, then it was absolutely worth it. And, you know, the demonologist I spoke with at length, you know, he said, look, these beings, they know where you came from. They know all the bad you've suffered, and they use it to their advantage. It's like a game of poker, and they've got all the cards. And whatever was in that house clearly knew what happened to you and clearly used it to hurt you more. So it was tough to talk about, but I think very worth talking about.
Absolutely. I applaud your courage and your bravery.
Oh, thank you.
It's, as you say, I think it is integral, because it kind of explains the dynamic between yourself and the friends that you move in there. I was chuckling when you had that situation where you've desperately trying to find somewhere to live, that you need a three bedroom because you've become like the musketeers, primarily because they've become their self-appointed bodyguards to yourself to look after you. And you've got this wonderful relationship at that particular period that you were really struggling. Everything was either two or four bedroom. And you were like, well, we don't really, it's the uncomfortable. Yeah, I'm sure you all got somebody you got on with, but it's not really the same. Probably even for the person that would have had to have been the fourth spoke in the wheel, as it were, Lindsay. So there is something quite amusing about that situation, that it's almost as if you can just see them blowing off the dust off this fog. Well, we've got this house. But I'm sure you won't like it. It becomes clear towards the end of the series that clearly they knew far more than they were saying. And I know when you're talking about it on the show, it's one of those things that you probably didn't realize it at the time, but they just wouldn't leave you alone. Everywhere you went, they were there with you when you were doing the viewing.
It was the weirdest thing. And it took me renting many more times as an adult to look back and go, yep, that was definitely not right. But we were young and we had only all lived in dorms for the most part. So we had no frame of reference. There is no like background checks, or you apply to college and they assigned you a dorm and that's it. Like in this case, you know, when we got to the house with the two landlords, I vividly remember, like, if one of us like strayed away, it felt like they were, you know, shepherds and we were sheep or something. Like if one of us even like took a step in a different direction, they would say, whoa, 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 not yet. We're not going over there yet. Come back here. We're looking at this first. We're all going to go look. And, you know, the bathroom and stuff was small, and they basically forced us to all go in there, and they were standing in the hall. Like they never let us just walk around the house and look. And if I remember trying to go upstairs at one point and them going, hey, hey, get back here. Not yet. You know, wait a second. And then to confirm it all, I, you know, minor spoiler alert, listeners, but one of the people I tracked down who lived in the home, Tom, he was openly told, or his parents were, by the landlords that, yeah, so what? The house is haunted. What do you want us to do? So they definitely knew, you know, they knew some, whether they believed or not, whether they just thought all our tenants are great, like whatever their motivation was, it was just very clear to me in the totality of this tale that they knew something was up. And what's weird is after we moved in, Paul, this is always the craziest thing to me, we could never get a hold of them. So they were honest, like flies on honey, you know, or whatever, while we were all in the house, wouldn't leave us alone. And then as soon as we moved in, we could never get a hold of them. Like if we needed something or something was wrong, there was one emergency that we needed their help with. And it took everything to get them on the phone. And they didn't even come to the house to see for themselves what was going on. They actually sent like a worker, like a maintenance person instead. And I thought that it's like they don't even want to see us. It was just so strange. So strange.
Well, I suppose it's a double-edged sword. When you're a group of young women with landlords, it's kind of, well, you really need them to come around. But then again, it's, I suppose it's also quite refreshing that you can kind of relax a bit, that they're not just going to turn up out of the blue.
Absolutely.
So it is one of the, I've lived in both situations where you've got a landlord who's overly attentive and mm-hmm. and another one where they're completely lackadaisical and it's almost as if they've moved to Australia or something because they just there's nothing happening at all. So it's it is a strange situation. So from moving in with your two friends, was it one of those things that you all felt a bit funny to start with, or it was one of those, as we've said, and people often do this when they talk about these situations, strange things will happen and people will just either ignore them or they'll pass them off or they'll say, oh, this house is drafty. I don't understand why all the kitchen cupboards keep opening, or who keeps leaving the fridge? Which one of my friends keeps using all the milk? It's a situation sometimes that it has to get, or something has to happen that you can't explain away, that makes you sit down and take stock and think, yeah, this is not the normal thing. I remember I spoke to a gentleman called Keith Linder, who lived in a very haunted house in Oregon, Lindsay. And he mentioned what was going on to somebody. And they said, oh, yeah, you've got raccoons in your attic. And he was like, what? Throwing plant pots around my front room in front of me. That's a raccoon. And it was amazing that when he was explaining or telling people about what was happening, people would just explain it away with the most ludicrous explanations, as though he was either lying or hallucinating everything.
You know, it's a strange phenomenon in the sense that what, and I don't know if it's us as human beings and individuals, or if it is depending on what you're dealing with, you know, whether it's a ghost, some sort of entity, a demon. I don't know how much of it is us and how much as individuals, or how much of it is the energy or spirit in the house manipulating or controlling certain people, because we had Amber, who, again, she is the exact person you said, oh, it's just a draft. Like, she had an explanation for things. Like, we could be on a couch, Paul, and I have memories of this, watching a movie, and I would start to get that feeling like it's in the kitchen. Like, I would know it's in the kitchen. It's in the kitchen. And then a cabinet would just go pink and, like, open up really fast. Like, pink, open. And I would just be like, like I would get that feeling like, and Amber would just casually look over and she'd be like, ah, that cabinet always has trouble staying shut. It just doesn't click well, or, you know, it's drafty in here. And she would just go back to, and I would be like, that is no draft. Like, I would just be like, I know that you just saw this, but Amber was just so shut down because she never believed in anything anyway. And if you don't believe in anything like this, there's no reason for you to, you'll always come up with a rational explanation. Because it doesn't exist to you. So you will find an explanation for everything, even the most unexplainable things. And then on the other hand, we have Rebecca. She goes into a bedroom and never comes out. I have a friend who literally goes in her room and never comes out. We can't even talk with her. And I'm the only one walking around, you know, with my hair on fire going, ghost, ghost, everyone, like radar, like, does anyone else know what's happening here? And so it was as if we were very divided. And I do believe to some extent what was in the house kind of did that. It kind of knew what to do to each one of us to cause the most problems and tensions between the group. And I think it singled us out in different ways. It knew there's no point in scaring this Amber person because she already doesn't believe in me. And that actually works to my favor because she'll never believe in anything Lindsay tells her, at least in the beginning. And as for Rebecca, who is this nice, sweet, kind person, well, I'm going to turn her into an angry, bitter person who now will not speak to anyone or even leave her room. And as for this Lindsay individual, well, she just came from a hell of a year, and she's not doing so great emotionally, and she has abilities. So this is the one. It's kind of like Goldilocks, you know,
yeah,
looking for that perfect fit. And whatever was in that house said, you know, and this one's just right. And it was like, and that's where we'll start with her. So, you know, it's difficult to say. I always had the sense what was in the house manipulated everyone and used our weaknesses against each of us, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Do you think it, as with anything, when you deal with situations like this, it's often the case that things will take a while. It's almost as if they're feeling that. There is the classic cliche in regards to certain poltergeist cases that it starts off really gently. Some would say cheekily or mischievous more than anything, and it gradually begins to escalate and escalate and escalate. Do you think that whatever was there or whatever is still there was simply sat back for a bit, taking stock of the situation, as you say, finding out how to push your buttons on each of you, as though it was revising, learning, adapting to you guys? And I would imagine as you've discovered more about the history of the house and what went on before you moved in, clearly this seemed to be something with malicious intent that was clearly highly intelligent and allowed it to be so cunning, it would seem.
Yes. You know, what I think was so interesting while making this podcast, because it gives you a lot of room for reflection. And, you know, I really approach the project like a journalist. Like, I tried to be as unbiased as I could, despite my feelings. I really set a lot of my emotions aside and said, let's analyze this. And as I started doing so, you know, it became clear to me, yeah, this thing was really smart and this thing is very strong. And what was crazy is, to your point, when I watch a lot of movies, and this is funny because people are like, do you still watch, you know, scary movies? I feel like you couldn't. I'm like, I am so desensitized from being in this house. Nothing scares me anymore. Nothing scares me anymore in a movie capacity, because I'm just like, Hollywood overdoes it. But nothing could ever be scarier than what I've lived through. So it's kind of like, you know, it's entertaining, you know. But often in movies, like you're saying, it's like the slow progression where little things happen. And, you know, as a spectator, you're like, ooh, obviously something's going to happen, or it's got to be haunted, or there's something going on here. I felt like we came in the house and it was like, I almost felt like when those landlords brought us in, if I had to really sum it up, that it already was taking notes. Like, they're escorting us through the house. We're in a big group. It's not going to do anything, or at least that I'm assuming was the landlord's hope. And it's walking around with a little notepad going, okay, Lindsay, abusive relationship. She's got abilities. You know, comes from a family. They believe in these things. She's religious, but not as religious as she used to be. Great. Check on that. I'll use that against her. Excellent. Oh, Rebecca, here's her little info. Like, I almost felt like as much as those landlords were just escorting us through this house and getting to know us, if that's what it was about, I still don't know. Whatever was in the house was already like, excellent. Here we go. Let's start the process now. Because when we moved in, unlike in a movie, my haunting happened immediately. It wasn't like I had some slow progression. It started day one, night one. And I was just like, this is beyond my comprehension. Because all other experiences I've had, big or small, you kind of feel it building. It's kind of like it reaches, like in a movie, a climactic point, if you will. It's a slow, you know, uphill thing. This was like, I was just put right on top of the mountain. Like, it was like, welcome to your haunting. I'm your host, the demon. And, you know, every night we are going to rock the house, girl. I am just going to show you things you cannot even imagine. It was just so intense from the first day. And everybody changed immediately. Like, all personalities, boom. Everything was like, again, and I wonder if when we went and saw the house and We were in there for a while. Whatever was there was like, I have been waiting for a group of people just like this one. This is the perfect setup for me. And this is going to be one hell of a year for me, you know?
Do you think as well, when you think about the time period that it happened, if it happened now, you would have more avenues of help and support than you did 20 years ago, Lindsay? Because I'm sure we're both aware, if you look at the paranormal environment at the turn of the century, it's completely unrecognizable from where we are today. Some may say we're on the way back out towards more sort of balanced and nuanced investigations rising to the top again. But I suppose at that, it seemed as though the paranormal had kind of dropped off entertainment's radar. There didn't seem to be very many programs talking about it. There weren't many renowned international parapsychologists. There were a couple of notable exceptions. Lloyd Olberbach is obviously a gentleman that you've got to know, who was quite well known even back then. A couple of other notable people, Hans Holzer maybe even as well. But as someone with a love of hauntings and poltergeists and things, even I'm aware that at that point in time, it seemed as though unless you knew what to do or where to go, you were basically on your own. Whereas now you could spend a day going through every single organization that might be available to help you.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny you bring that up, and I think I talked about it, I touched on it briefly, but I spent a lot of time while in that house trying to research how we could get help, because the internet existed, and for any of you youngsters, I know this will be hard for you to imagine, but it wasn't quite what it is now. you know, it wasn't Google a topic and you find out everything. You really had to know how to use the internet. Hence, we used to have internet classes, which, you know, in school and the like, you know, we had typing classes and how to use the internet and how you search. I mean, I grew up playing the original Oregon Trail on a computer and thinking that was that, you know, the height of sophistication and interest there. But, you know, so I remember trying my best and it was just so limited. Like I don't know how much of that was just I couldn't find the resources, but I'm pretty tenacious and I'm pretty resilient and pretty smart when it comes to research. So I just couldn't get anybody to help me. And I did reach out. I found a couple paranormal investigating teams. And I reached out to them and said, listen, I am dealing with something beyond all comprehension here. You know, like I need help. I called them, nothing. And I know now well enough that most paranormal groups, if they get an email, they at least respond. If they get a phone call, they will at least call you back. And I couldn't help but wonder, was something else at foot, at play in the house that was just like, they ain't never getting back to you, hon. Like, I won't even let the call come through the house, like, which I would not be surprised with what was so strong in that house. And what it was also shocking is I really reached out to a lot of churches. I didn't like to think about it at the time, but after speaking with demonologist Michael Salerno, I realized I was pretty close to being possessed, which is such a messed up thing to say out loud. And it always bothers me. But I think I knew that deep down because I reached out to so many churches and of various religions in the city of Kent, around Kent. No one would get back to me. And if I did hear from someone or I talked to them on the phone, they're like, no, we don't do that. And I'm like, you won't come bless the house? Like, you can't come help me? And they'd be like, nope, sorry. And now I'm just like, via many people's religions that I know, yeah, people do that all the time. So I don't understand what it was that back then no one would do anything. It doesn't make sense compared to, as you're saying, what we have now and what we know now. So I do think if I had the resources that are out there now, it could have been different. I don't know if it could have made it worse. That's the other thing I always consider. Maybe I didn't get help because it could have made it worse if I got the wrong help, you know? But who's to say? But I do know that a dream of mine, which is messed up for most people, they're like, what is wrong with you? But myself and my former roommates, Laura, who you heard from on the show as well, we've all said that if ever given the opportunity, we would go back and stay in the house because we know that we could get to the bottom of what's there if we all came back and brought our energy into that space and we brought a team, I'd love to bring people like Lloyd, like Michael Salerno. I'd want to bring scientists, neurologists. I mean, I'd want to do a huge study. I'd stay there with them for weeks and we could all figure out what's going on, because I know the evidence we would capture would probably be some of the most mind-blowing stuff. But also just to understand what's there and why, maybe, maybe not. I don't know, but it is a dream of mine. And weirdly enough, you know, many of us who did live in that house are interested in all partaking. I don't know what's wrong with us or why we'd want to, but I think sometimes in life you just want to face your fears, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And with the greatest respect, if you spent a year there dealing with the very worst it could throw at you, because this is the other interesting aspect of your experiences. Often when we deal with a haunting or a demon even, it tends to be the usual sort of weapons that it would utilize, or the usual kind of experiences that people would have. What seemed to be going on in this particular house was that it was trying all kinds of different things to an extent that I've probably only sort of heard about in one or two particular cases over the years. Yours seem to be such a variety of phenomena that it, as we were saying about its intelligence and its motives, it seemed to be just saying, oh, well, I've got this in my arsenal. Let's see how much this frightens them. Let's try this on for size. Oh, this week I might try this. And it just seemed to be, even when you think that you've got a handle on what's going on, you've got used to what's going on, you've got an idea of what to expect, it kind of just pulls the rug from under your feet and goes, surprise.
Yeah, and that was really the craziest thing, was just that it was so smart. And that's the one thing I guess I could really explain to that should come across to people. Whatever was in that house knew what it was doing. You know, in the story you hear about this incident that happened with me on the stairs, and that didn't happen just once. It happened a lot. And it happened at random. When I least expected it, when I was not thinking for some reason about it, when I thought, you know what, maybe it's over, you know? Or sometimes it would go, you know what, we're going to do it 3 times this week because why not? You know, like, it was just so smart, and it just knew, and it really knew how to cause arguments. You hear in the story about how the roommates were struggling because they thought someone was stealing their silverware, and they started having arguments and fighting amongst themselves because it knew, how can I start to really subtly, don't make it too obvious that something paranormal is doing it. What's better, instead of scaring them outright right away, what's better is to start making people get angry with each other. So I'm going to do little things to cause fighting amongst people, make people divided, make people not get along, make them not trust each other. Ooh, look at them fighting. Like, you could just sense that it was just like in a corner eating demon popcorn, just going, whoa, this is a good one that I started today. You know, yes. Like, you know, you just had this sense that it was so smart, that it was doing it with horrible intentions, but also for its own entertainment. 100%. I knew it was doing a lot of what it did for its own entertainment.
At what point did you become scared of what was going on, Lindsay? I mean, sometimes, as we've said, things can happen that make you jump, make you feel unsettled, make you feel a little frightened. I think there's a difference between, and this might sound a bit daft, I think for me, there's a difference between being frightened or startled and when you become scared. I think that is a different level of fear. And when you find yourself in a situation where you are, I mean, this is one of those cliches that people will always say is, well, if you were that frightened, why don't you move out? As if you could just all pack up and just disappear as if nothing was going on, or you'd got the resources or the situation that you were able to just go somewhere else immediately. It baffles me that people think that you can just, oh, well, why don't you all go and live in a hotel for the rest of the year, as if you'd got money to burn. So I think it shows sometimes that the reality of these situations is that you might be scared to death, but you've nowhere else to go.
Yeah, you know, and to answer that question, because I bring it up in the podcast for sure, but to be clear about it, and luckily my parents apologized 1,000 times over and we're very close, and my mother goes, what the heck was I thinking? I told my parents many times, who were living in Florida at the time, that I was living through a horrific haunting and I needed out of this house. And my parents, I don't come from a lot of money. We are a Midwestern, middle class, blue collar, hardworking family. But my parents really wanted to help out every way they could. And they paid my rent for me in college. And they said, we don't have any more money. We cannot give you another deposit for a new place. Like, deal with it. Mm-hmm. Like, honey, like, what are you like? How bad can it be? And when I realized, and you have to think from the mind of a 20-some-year-old, when your parents are doing everything they can to help you, and you know that they're putting themselves out for your education, and they are living without to provide for you, and they tell you on the phone, I need you to deal with this because we don't have any more money, you in your core go, okay. I cannot burden my parents further. Yeah. I've talked to them. I have to respect them because they're trying so hard to make me have a better life. And so I have to just get through this. It's 1 year. I can get through this. And so that's a big part of it, is just that we didn't have the means to leave. And I talk about in the podcast, we stayed a lot with my husband, then boyfriend, in his ridiculously dirty, small, awful apartment. When the activity in the house was so bad, we couldn't sleep there for fear of what could happen to you. We're talking, me, Adam, and Amber would pile in a car and go stay there because you knew that maybe, I don't know if it's too crazy to say that your life was in danger, but you knew your soul was in danger, I guess, for sure. And as for when did I become scared? When did I know this is crossing a line? Immediately, I knew it was bad. And it's, you know, you in my podcast, you hear about that nightmare. And I can't even put that into words. A year of only one dream over and over and over. I've never had that in my life before and or since. Mm-hmm. Never had sleep paralysis like that before or since. So I knew something was wrong and I knew it was bad and I knew that I was probably dealing with something pretty bad here. But the incident in the stairs when it pulled me down the stairs, Paul, that was the moment I said, if it can do this, it can kill me. And I remembered thinking, if it can grab me and pull me downstairs, why couldn't it, if I'm eating a dinner? There's this movie called The Invisible Man with, it's a newer movie or something like that. And not to give too much away, there's an invisibility suit and people are getting killed in public and they think other people are doing it. It's a sci-fi type movie. It's a newer movie. I think her name is Elizabeth. She was in Mad Men. She's in it. So if your listeners are like, what is Lindsay talking about? But that's the film. But anyways, when I reflect back, I do have memories of being, and this is, I've never said this before, so your listeners get to hear it first. I remember having memories if I was using a sharp knife after the thing happened to me on the stairs, when I got pulled down the stairs, if I was using a sharp knife, every now and again in my brain, this fear would creep in. The thing in this house right now could take that knife and slit your wrists and it wouldn't be you. Like, you're home alone. You're cutting, I don't know, you know, you're cutting up some vegetables for a stir fry and no one's home. And if it can pull you down the stairs, why couldn't it make you do that? But it wouldn't be you. And then everyone would come home and find you dead and your parents would think you killed yourself and you didn't. And then your soul would be probably stuck in this house for all you, like, I would have those things pop in my head. Like, and I would try to push them out very quickly because I would think, oh God, did I just give it an idea? Like, I'd be like, oh God, no. Like, did I just give it an idea? I hope it didn't hear my thoughts, you know? But that's when it crossed the line. When I realized if it can physically pull me downstairs, all bets are off now. Like, this has crossed into the real world. We can say that everything prior to that, if you're listening, your imagination or, you know, whatever, we could write it off to whatever you want to. Drafty house, this, that, or the other, active imagination, mental illness, whatever you would want to throw out there. But the minute something can pull you down the stairs, it has now entered the actual real world, my plane of existence. And then you don't know what it can do. And I had so many fears of things it would try to do to me. And it was just so scary because I would try again. I would try not to. It's like in the movie, the original Ghostbusters, when that Azul or whatever is like, you know, pick your destroyer or yes. whatever, right? Or whatever she says, pick your destructor or whatever. And they all try to go think a blank thought, like don't have a thought in your head. And then Ray pictures the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. Yes. And here he comes to destroy the city. I would have thoughts after that physical incident. And like I'm saying, with cutting vegetables with a sharp knife, like things would pop in my head that like, if it can do that, then it could do this. And I would just go push it out of your head. Like, just don't go there. Like, because you don't want it to see it, you know, just like in Ghostbusters, clear your mind. Don't think of anything because, you know, I could be in the shower and I would just start knowing it was in there, like, which is such a creepy thing. And I don't go into this at length, but I'd be in the bathroom and know what was in there. And I would think, could it just randomly right now pull the curtain back and like start smacking me around like I've seen in some crazy ghost poltergeist type movie, like Haunting in Connecticut? Is it going to wrap the shower curtain around me and just start choking me out? Like, I would literally be like, it can do anything. And sometimes I think for it, because it was so smart, it pick and chose what it did and when, and it just sat back, like I said, like enjoying the show. Like, it was probably in there going, listening to my thoughts, I assume, and going, yeah, I could do that and I could do that, but it's so much more fun how much you're scaring yourself just thinking about what I can do. And so I'm just going to wait and pick something else. And when I'm ready, I'll do that instead, you know?
Well, I think that just shows the malicious intent of it, because I've spoken to other people and other investigators where they've dealt with certain cases over the years, Lindsay, and it shows that when there are physical situations like that, there is that fear that you think, well, why? It could just crush my neck if it wanted to. So you then realise that whatever it is, it's just playing with you. It's toying with you. It's trying to break you mentally and spiritually because it wants you to know what it can do, even though it's not shown its full power, as it were. It's happy to feed off the fear it can instill by its potential for harm rather than actually the full extent of what would happen.
Yeah, and if you think about historically speaking, you know, a lot of great, or not maybe necessarily great, but a lot of people in power have said, is it better to be feared or loved? And they all say it's better to be feared, right? Mm. So when you have the power to have that sort of fear, the fear itself is so controlling and so much better than even having to raise a finger. You don't have to do anything. You do one thing and know for the next 3 months, the fear that I elicited is enough to sustain my power. So it's better to be feared than loved. And so I'll just do this thing. And there would be things it would do more and more and more, knowing, but it picked its timing, like appropriately so. Like, it just knew she's having a good day. She forgot about how scared I can make her. Well, right now, let's do it. Let's do this to her and really freak her out.
I suppose leaving is probably one of those situations in life that we all have moments that we look back on tinged with both a bit of relief and a bit of guilt, I would suspect, if that doesn't sound too silly. Because I think when you've gone through something like that and you've got out of it and you've left the property behind, were you ever troubled thinking, I wonder if somebody else is going through what's happened to us? Or, and you know, and this is not a trick question under any circumstances, Lindsay, was it one of those where you were able to compartmentalize it and think, well, that's my experience in that house, whatever happened before or since is another chapter in that particular house's history?
You know, it was one of those things that when I left, my first fear, which is also when people say, well, why didn't you leave the house sooner or go stay with friends or family? My biggest fear is it was going with me.
Yes.
Because I thought that whatever is there is so strong and powerful. Why on earth would it not come with me and do this to me for the rest of its life? Like, I'm so under its thumb. Like, why wouldn't it hitch a ride? You know? Mm. So my first fear was we're going to leave and this is going to continue. And I thought it would because the nightmare I had in the house during that year when I slept other places, I still had the nightmare. And I really thought that that was a bit of a warning from it, or like letting me know, yeah, when you leave, I'm coming. Looking back, I think it was its way of saying, I'm going to keep her here for a year because she thinks that when she has this nightmare, I can manipulate her into have it outside of this house, that I'm going to go with her. So she doesn't want to put this burden on anyone else. So she'll come back here. She'll sleep here. She'll do it because of what I'm doing and convincing her that I will leave with her when I really won't or can't. So my first fear was, don't want to bring this thing with me. When I realized it wasn't coming with me, when I moved out and the dream stopped, first night we move out of the house and I move to a new place to stay, no nightmare. And I went, oh my God. And I also had a sense of anger because I was like, so you really weren't going to leave with me, huh, demon? Like, you really made me believe you were. And so I never stayed with my aunt and uncle who would have taken me in, or stayed with my, you know, younger sister, or stayed with my older sister, because you convinced me that you would go to their house and do stuff to them. And in reality, you couldn't. You little bastard. I was just like, how dare you? You know, like, you really cost me a year of sleep. And that was its intention. Clearly, again, this thing's smart. So after I left, though, I couldn't let it go, Paul. I could not let it go. I would just think about it all the time. Like, I was still haunted. I say it in the podcast. I was still haunted in a whole other way, which was, did it just happen to us? Could it have happened to other people? Why did this have to happen to us? You know, I couldn't let it go. And I had to move on with my life, but it was just always in my mind. And so many things in the world would happen that would remind me of something that happened in that house, that it would just all come flooding back. So I knew that even though the demon didn't leave the house, it did, because it left such an impression on me that I've carried it with me, and it's been almost 20 years later and it's still here. So I knew very quickly, man, I can't let this go. I can't let this go. And that's what really led me to eventually make the podcast, because I finally had the time to really dig into this and try to figure, even just if I could answer even one question for me or one question for one of my roommates, then it was a success. That's my goal, was to do the best job I could, because this isn't just my haunting. This is the story of a lot of people, and especially people that I care about. And it was, how can I give them an answer? I can't, but I'm going to try my damnedest. I'm going to do the best I can.
Well, I think the pandemic was a strange time for a lot of people, and a lot of projects came out of it. I am delighted that yours was one of them, because it's such a worthy endeavor. And I think that it's a remarkable piece of work. I've heard you very humbly describe your fear about this. I think, as with any of us, when we put something out, and even with someone with your career as in a background working in art, Lindsay, there is always this kind of duality of talent and confidence, that whenever you put your heart and soul into something, yes, you may enjoy it, but there is also this concern of what would others think, as daft as it may seem, because, you know, I've doing this show, I've met some remarkable people, some incredibly talented people. And all of us, I think, at some point, regardless of what other people tell us about how much they may enjoy what we do, we still have this conflict internally where we don't sometimes think that what we do has value. Was it challenging on both aspects, both revisiting this and also putting yourself out there? I know, as you say, you've discussed this on a couple of television shows, Paranormal Witness being the prime one where it focused solely on your particular case, that you would be scoffed at, or the people who were involved wouldn't want to revisit it once again, or it was such a passion of you that you had the drive and the tenacity and the care to package it as well as you have, because it's a wonderful piece of work.
Well, thank you. You know, weirdly enough, so when I was going to start it, I actually stopped listening to any paranormal podcasts in general. I actually said, you're not going to listen to anything else. you need to come up with something as original as possible to you, the way you want to tell this, the way you see it in your mind. I love creative writing. I always have. And I just, you know, I've written actually 6 books, all unpublished. You know, I think the early ones probably are terrible. I have a later one I think is actually probably pretty good. But I've always, and I just did it for fun. I just would write books for fun. I don't know who just does that. And I'm not an English major, but I would come up with an idea and go, I'm going to write that. So I had a sense of how I wanted to do it. And I also wanted to make sure it was a very genuine and real, because again, I'm doing this not just for myself, but for my friends, for my husband, and eventually I would learn for others. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to make sure that this just came from me. And when I started it, I remember asking people close to me their thoughts on my approach and what I was going to do. And I'll be honest, a lot of people around me didn't think it was going to maybe be so good. they were kind of like, I don't know. That's how you're going to do it. Aren't you just going to tell the story? People would just say, what do you mean you're going to weave in folklore and urban legends? And why are you having all these guests? Just tell the story. what are you doing? And I just said, well, listen, I love writing books. And the way that I see this, if I'm going to take a journalistic approach and I have to organize the series of events and all these things, but I'm also trying to answer questions, I need to look at this as a whole story. I need to weave in things like folklore and urban legends because they feed into the plot of this story. These things all happen and take place, you know, hearing that the house, you know, was supposedly where a doctor murdered his wife. That's full urban legend folklore. That never happened. And everybody believed it in the town. Right. So these things do matter. So I got a lot of negative feedback, to be honest, originally. I sure did. But I thought, that's okay. 5 years of art school, my art teachers, I had some that thought I made great, great stuff. And I had others that thought I made absolute garbage. And they were cruel as could be. And I just said, when you make something, if you're making it for the right reasons and you know that you are doing it from a place of thought and a place of creativity, it's not going to be for everybody. I mean, Vincent van Gogh, he lived his whole life and only sold his paintings to his brother, and he passed away and is now one of the most coveted artists who's ever lived, and his paintings are beyond comprehension and value. So you just have to know that you're not going to, maybe not everybody's going to like what you do, and you have to be okay with taking it on the chin if people tell you that you've done a bad job. And it's funny because I taught myself how to do everything. I wrote it, I researched, I did all the interviewing and the editing. I produced the whole thing myself, and I had never done anything like this. I had to teach myself everything. And the biggest compliment I received has been again and again, I'll get people who write me and say, who was your production team? I would like to hire them, or who produced the show, who made it all. And I'm like, I did. And they're just like, what? And I'm like, yeah. And I remember listening to my first few episodes, I'll be honest, I cried. Not out of this is my story, but because I didn't think that it was very good, because I'm very hard on myself. So I remember listening and going, I don't know if this is good enough. You know, I don't know if this is good enough. And I needed it to be good enough, again, not for me, but for Amber and Reba and Adam and Lane and Laura and Tom. I needed it to be good for them. And so I was approaching it with, I just want to make them proud. And I remembered thinking, there'll probably only be about 10 people who listen to this, because it'll be my parents and my husband and my friends who lived there. I didn't know that so many people would end up listening and writing me. And, you know, I'm very blessed in that way, because again, I didn't know if it was good, you know, and it turns out it is. And so that's a great thing.
It is surprising how we can hide ourselves away, as you say, that you kind of ignored and shunned everything else that was going on, because it's very difficult sometimes that you can find yourself trying to mimic what's happened before, or try and do it. And I think one of the outstanding points, and there are several to your show, as I say, it is a marvelous piece of work, is this situation that each episode is full of interesting things, and you've got these wonderful rota of guests who are giving perspectives on different aspects to it, that for me elevates it and gives it, puts more meat on the bones of the whole story as well as the experiences. And I think it allows the listener to get a fuller picture of not just your particular story, but everything that it leads to or it entails. And there are different episodes that focus on different parts of it and different aspects, as you say, the folklore and the parapsychology and sleep paralysis and urban myths and history, demonology and psychic mediums. It covers the whole pantheon of it. And I think that alone shows the care and the respect that you had for all the other participants in the story, that you wanted to treat it in the manner that it's not po-faced either. I mean, it's got its tongue firmly in its cheek in certain aspects. It talks about challenging situations. It's brutal. It's honest. But it's also funny and warm and caring and compulsive. And as you say, I mean, I listened to some of my early episodes, Lindsay, and it makes me cry, but probably for a different reason compared to where I am now. So I salute you on your endeavours, your talent and your deep care for everybody involved in this, because it shines through in every single episode. So I congratulate you not only for getting through everything, but for bringing this to us in the format that you have, because it's wonderful.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you for listening and having me on. It's just been wonderful to just get this project of mine out into the world and see that it's been received well. And it's been for everyone who's lived in that house that I have communicated with, especially those of us who were really affected by the house. For them, it makes them just sleep better at night. It makes them feel like we didn't go through this for nothing. I guess that's the best way to say it. We all lived through this and it wasn't for naught. There was lessons to be learned and hopefully our story. And that's always been my goal. I hope my story, whether it's from the stalking I had and or what happened in this house, it helps someone else in some way if they are feeling lost or dealing with anything like this. I just hope it helps.
Absolutely. So Lindsay, where can everybody listen to it, follow you online, follow your work, and keep up to date with your upcoming projects? Because I know this has kind of pulled you into the world of paranormal investigation and stories outside of your own experiences.
Yeah. And with that, you know, my next season, if you will be all interview based, friends, family, listeners, people from the paranormal community. Again, when you're the person who has the scariest story anyone's ever heard, they all will all come to you with their tales. So
yes.
I thought a very different direction to take is just fun conversations, very similar to what we're doing today. And my goal is for future seasons, which, you know, knock on wood, that can happen, would be more similar to season one. I definitely have some things in mind, but season one took a long time to create. So I'm hopeful to do more like season one in the future. But for now, to keep just the vibe alive, if you will, it'll be more interview based. But you can find me at www.thechillingpodcast.com or on Instagram at The Chilling Podcast. You can listen to us, The Chilling, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and basically anywhere you listen. If you aren't on any of those, then you can actually listen through the website as well. And that's where you can find me.
Fabulous. It's been a real pleasure speaking with you and going through your traumatic experiences. And I'm delighted that, as I said, you've brought this project to fruition. And I wish you the very best with your endeavours for both you and your family. And I wish you all the very best. And I hope to get the opportunity to speak to you again in future, Lindsay. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you for having me on, Paul. And anytime you want to have me back, I am game.